The reason why Dort Jr. is quoted by William Lyne as saying that the copper is the active is because in the Slavic tongue, sometimes that's the way what we call reactants translates into the Russian. It translates as the active, and it's active because copper encourages oscillations in the dielectric field that surrounds the copper transmission line in the electric utility grid. Now, the only reason why we have current and thus watts to spend is because of the pole transformers, which are placed periodically on the transmission line in residential neighborhoods to maintain the magnetic field close to the point of its consumption. Because that's what we're going to be spending. We can't spend voltage. But the rest of the electric utility grid is simply high tension wires, high voltage. Because that's all copper is good for, is voltage, the dielectric field. But it also encourages oscillation. So in the Amman case, we have copper tubes and that's it. That's the only instance of copper. Because it's alternating. And because of a parallel capacitance placed between the two copper tubes, and so there's no movement of, shall we say, wattage through the parallel capacitance. That's just to keep things opposed in polarity but synchronized. The spark gap, so to speak, that exists down in the transistor realm of the two diodes at the base, the bottom end of the copper pair of copper tubes, that's going to be a flow of sorts, but it doesn't really go anywhere. No, actually, let me back up. So the copper encourages alternating oscillations. And you need that to drive the rest of the system. But in back in the day, they had DC motors. They were not AC motors. Because the electric cars of the Amman's era were not AC, they were DC. In fact, for the longest time, they were standard DC, to have DC motors in electric cars up until the first generation electric cars, you know, starting around 1997-ish. And whenever anybody was instructed on how to do their own conversions, it was always DC. So that's the motor that's in the Amman electric vehicle, is a DC motor. Yet we need AC to drive over-unity. We're not going to get over-unity on a DC-driven system. It has to be AC. But they want DC as the end product. And it's very clever what they've done. Just looking at the... So there's... wait a minute. I better finish what I started with the copper. So there's copper spheres at the top of the copper tubing. And there's proto or pre... plasmic ionization going on because there's no arcing between the two spheres. It's just ionization of the air molecules. Needless to say, the so-called transistor down at the bottom end has only one direction because it's a copper aluminum dyadic situation in which there are two copper leads between the two copper tubings, but then there's the aluminum lead that's the main trunk line leading to the iron side of the circuit along an open transmission line composed of a single aluminum wire that does branch out into two subsystems, but before I get ahead of myself... now, I forget the which way. I believe the aluminum is the cathode. I'm always mixing things up. That means the current is encouraged to travel away from the copper. Likewise, at the iron end, the same thing. Oh dear. Well, now, wait a second. It all depends upon the electronegativity, too. That's going to probably... it's still a one-way flow because it's a open transmission line, that aluminum main trunk line. Anyway, I guess I can't peer into that too well. So let's see. So the copper is alternating back and forth. The parallel capacitance extending out from the two tubes in the middle of the two tubes, hidden underneath. We don't get to see it. It helps create synchronicity and opposite in polarity so that I guess the formation of the separation of amps from volts by 180 degrees is encouraged on the copper side. Because of that parallel capacitance between the two sets of tubes. Meanwhile, the iron coil is wrapped in layers, just like a pole transformer. And in between each layer is a bit of capacitance. Namely, when you look at pole transformers, how they wrap it, they have waxed paper and aluminum sheeting in between the layers of the wrapping of the the windings, in between the layers of windings of a pole transformer. Well, in this case, we only have one winding. It's a single iron coil, and it loops back to itself at its transistor, so-called transistor, made up of three leads, two iron and one aluminum. The aluminum is part of the other end, the opposite the copper end. It's the iron end of the the aluminum open transmission line, the main trunk line, or the main line, I should say. Forget the trunk. Well, yeah, it's the main trunk. But we're going to be encouraging a DC field surrounding this iron coil, and it's going to be transmitting to nearby house wiring, transmission line wiring, a DC field that's going to pulse. It's going to be a pulsed DC field because the copper end is going to provoke pulsations of a sort, except there, strictly it's alternating. But here it's going to be one direction, and this is why, what I'm going to say. So what happens is we take the two branch lines of aluminum coming out from the same main aluminum open transmission wire, two sub-branches that go to two sets of aluminum plates. Each one has its own set, and each set is wired in parallel with each other. Each plate, aluminum plate, is wired in parallel with the next one, but the two sets are in series relative to each other. And they interleave just like the interleaving of the copper plates extending from the two copper tubes, creating a single stack with dielectric separators between them, creating a parallel capacitance stack. Likewise, we're doing the same thing among or between the layers of windings of the iron coil. Now, it's very interesting what goes on here, because first of all, they'll go back to the same junction point on the main aluminum open transmission wire, those two sets of aluminum plates. Yet the capacitance, the dielectric capacitance between those two sets, will require or demand that the two sets are of opposite polarity at the same moment in time. That's what capacitors do. They encourage opposition of polarization across the dielectric, resulting in it registering or occurring as an event within the two plates on either side of the capacitor, in this case, the two sets of plates that are stacked in alternating layers so that one separation between two adjacent layers of the iron winding has one aluminum plate from one sub-branch Well, the next one above and below is the other two from the other branch wire coming out from the same point, the same node, electrically speaking, from the open transmission line, the open aluminum wire. So it's weird. I think's going to happen is that the aluminum is setting up a dielectric field that's DC oriented. The iron wire is setting up a magnetic field that's also DC oriented, but it's pulsed, and that's going to jam up a storehouse of voltage in the aluminum plates, positive on one set, negative on the other. And although it pulses, it still goes in only one orientation. And if you can imagine a helical field, let's say the iron winding is kept, its axis is kept perpendicular to the Earth's surface, which I believe they did, and they might have done that for a reason, always maintaining that vertical orientation. We've got a helical field because of the shape of the coil, or the orientation of the coil relative to the surface of the Earth, a helical coil that's likewise the field, both the dielectric and the magnetic are helical in their shape and orientation, with a distinct pole at the top of the helical field and its opposite pole at the bottom. Let's say it's north upwards and south downwards, except there's no way to determine it unless there's a single diode placed on each branch of iron wire, but we don't have a diode there. We have a diode at the junction between the aluminum lead and the two iron leads. And that actually creates a direction of its own, but it's not... it doesn't determine the helical field. In fact, it's perpendicular to it. Well, I don't know. That sounds vaguely familiar. Yeah, the left-hand rule or the right-hand rule. Maybe it does determine it after all. In a weird kind of way. See, I'm still not clear on that part. But it just seems to me there's no other way it can function except as a DC-oriented field that pulses. So every half cycle of the alternating field of the copper side of the circuit becomes a unidirectional DC field on the iron aluminum side. Now we have to include aluminum there because it's aluminum juxtaposed between the layers of iron windings, extending both to the iron, in between the layers of the iron windings, and then in the other direction, extending to its common electrical connection node at the main aluminum open line. I can't see any other way for that to function except as a DC-oriented field, but it's being pulsed. As a side effect of the fact that it's an alternating field in the copper, which drives the whole thing, and drives up the voltage, and drives up the magnetic field. Now, the only purpose of iron is remanence, because it's not meant to carry the transmission of power. It has resistance 6 times greater than copper, but iron remembers. It magnetically remembers. This is the whole basis of the perpetual motion holder experiment that Edward Leach Scanlan had popularized. And so the Amon brothers are using iron to remember. And remanence, magnetic memory, is DC. It's one half of an alternating cycle. If you're going to have an alternating cycle, the iron's going to remember one half, because that's what happens in a perpetual motion holder experiment. You put in a charge from your coils into the core, toroidal core, and it remembers what you put there until it's released based on whether or not you have disconnected the iron plate from your horseshoe core, or you put in another charge, a new charge, into the core of opposite polarity. In other words, you take the coils off. Well, you can't take them off, can you? Well, no, you swap the terminals of your battery that you used to put the charge there in the first place. You swap the terminals so that you put in an opposite polarity, and that will release the remembrance, the remnants of what you had put in there previously before it's able to store the new orientation of memory. So remnants, magnetic memory, is always DC oriented, and that's the only reason for having an iron core, an iron barrel-shaped coil, is to remember. But it's a DC phenomenon, and so it's kind of a giveaway. It should be a strong hint that this is going to be a DC-oriented generator, which is kind of phenomenal, because never in my work with simulations have I ever managed to create a DC over unity circuit. It's impossible. You have to have oscillations that alternate in polarity to drive up your amplitude of your waves. But they managed to do it on the copper side, transfer everything over to the iron aluminum side, and get a combinatorial aluminum iron DC field that's oriented in one direction only. Because there's nothing. Well, no, I could be wrong. Maybe it does alternate. Maybe it's not DC. But maybe it's so inclined as to encourage. If it alternates, that means the capacitances in between the layers of windings have the opportunity to discharge themselves. Well, one set discharges into the other set across the iron winding. Since the barrel-shaped iron coil is just about shorted to itself, not only the two leads going through its iron aluminum transistor, but the double pair of diodes facing off or facing away, is the case depending on how you want to call it. But the windings within each layer, it's bare iron wire. So it's really just a sheath of iron, basically, connected to the layer above and below by a single strand of winding. It doesn't have anywhere to go, which is good because it has high resistance. Yet, it has memory. So maybe it does alternate. Somehow or another, maybe it manages to alternate polarity with each pulse. But it's going to accentuate the DC, the half phase, the DC memory, the magnetic memory, throughout the period of the half phase, the half cycle, in between pulses. And it's going to accentuate it as a kind of pressure because it's not going anywhere. It can't go anywhere. And so it's superb for transmission. Now, in a load that's receiving it through an iron receiving coil that doesn't have any of this gimmicks except iron rebar adjacent to the iron receiving coil, and then connecting a load to the two terminals of that coil, wow, this is fantastic, because he's broadcasting memory. He's not broadcasting current. So this is the answer to Aaron Murakami's question, how can we put Edward Leeds Skolnin's perpetual motion holder to work? By not viewing what you're putting into the core, the iron toroidal core, as current, because it's not. It's internalized inside the iron. So you can't get any use out of it unless, of course, you put a copper short, shorted coil, as Eric Dollard describes, going in through the interior, one end of the loop of that copper short going through the interior of that iron loop. Now you've got a copper short, encouraging current within the copper shorted loop. But the Amon brothers don't do that. Since they use an iron receiving coil, maybe the load is copper. So maybe they don't have to rewind or unwind all of the windings on the motor in their EV and fill it, rewind it with iron winding, maybe. I don't know. That was never told to us, whether or not the load coil is iron or copper. We know the receiving coil is iron, and we know it's laying adjacent to iron rebar, which has surface area, and it has tubular orientation of polarization to encourage maybe the same thing, polarization along the length of the coil, or serve as a kind of longitudinal antenna in its shape, although it's made out of iron, not anything else. But it does seem to be a very fascinating way to transmit power, because it's longitudinal in its orientation, and yet it's both dielectric and magnetic in what it transmits. And yet, we know magnetism is short range, and so the only component that's going to go anywhere are the two plates, the dielectric force among the two plates that are stacked within the layering of the iron winding. The iron is going to want to concentrate its magnetic memory within itself. So that's really not going to broadcast anything, but it will drive the aluminum to do the broadcasting. And I always suspected the aluminum was doing the broadcasting. It makes sense, because Dort Jr. said it's the reflective. Because it's paramagnetic, it does not want to embody magnetism. It wants to export it, excrete it. Which is why UFOs are built out of aluminum shell, because they have to export all of their electrodynamics into their local environment to do the thing they do and float and defy gravity and inertia and whatnot. Let's see. I guess I've covered everything that had to do with parallel capacitance. And I'm still stretching things, because I still don't understand exactly what's going on. But I can see the relevant importance of parallel capacitance and how it integrates into both sides of the circuit, the iron-aluminum side and the copper side. So now aluminum, by way of extension, is integrated with the iron, fully integrated. It's not just floating out there. At first I thought maybe it's just covers the iron, but it doesn't. Well, it would have to be covering the inner side, the inner surface of the iron winding, because we don't see it on the outside. But now it's not merely on the inner side, it's between each layer of winding, because we don't know how deep the windings are, how many there are, or if there's just one layer. I'm speculating that there's multiple layers, and that's an invitation to integrate the aluminum into the iron winding. So now we've got parallel capacitance everywhere throughout the circuit, ensuring that synchronicity occurs everywhere between the dielectric field and the magnetic component of electricity, so that it behaves according to all of my simulations indicate, that we want to get amps and volts to become opposite in polarity early on when the circuit first starts up, before it gains any amplitude. Because if you don't get that opposition early on, the build of amplitude will suppress that separation of 180 degrees once the amplitude gets high enough. So it has to start right away and maintain itself as it's tenderly growing, or initially, the first inception. It can't come later. It'll be suppressed from coming later, and then it becomes a conventional circuit incapable of overunity. And I suspect the amps and the volts have to be in opposition, or else or no appreciable overunity can occur. I mean, I've seen, you know, people demonstrate circuits that are slightly overunity. That's nice. But you don't get the fantastic overunity without amps and volts being in opposition. Now, I want to make sure I say something about Jim Murray's transforming generator. He uses parallel capacitance between the two exterior coils adjacent to the main transforming coil that rotates. The two exterior coils do not rotate. They're stationary. But they're outside. They're not concentric with the transforming coil. They're outside the transforming coil. And because of that, they have low magnetic coupling, which means their mutual inductance is low, but their parallel capacitance is going to be high. It's going to be elevated. And that's what causes what he called resonance between the coils, what I would call synchronicity of orientation of the waveforms to keep them locked in step. And because he has more than one coil, well, he has a pair of stationary coils, he's got the perfect situation for the manifestation of amps opposed to volts by 180 degrees. Driving the thing to ridiculous overunity levels if he doesn't regulate how much power is fed back to the motor that is rotating the transforming coil in the center. So it's a perfect example of parallel capacitance in operation, done his way. Not the way that I'm suggesting for the Amon device, but in a different way. And it's a way I've become familiar with in studying magnetic coupling, although I didn't really realize that it was parallel, because I never really even had any awareness of the distinction between parallel and serial capacitance. Not that I really cared either. I didn't know or care or whatever. I couldn't discriminate. That's the word I'm looking for. But it's also the situation of the John Bedini energizer that he came out with in the 80s at the press conference with, what was that guy's name? Brian Jennings, the radio talk show host of KCRW, hosting that press conference that made John Bedini instantly famous and then very notorious among whoever the big Samoans who came and pushed him up against the wall in his lab in the San Fernando Valley and caused him to want to leave L.A. and go to Idaho. That boyhood dream of mechanically coupling a motor to a generator and feeding the output of the generator back to the motor with a little bit to spare that he fulfilled is, again, parallel capacitance among its coils. Now, they're very interesting, though. There's another property going on there in that the coils rotate always facing the same side of their coil to the center of rotation, similar to Tesla's study of the moon, the phases of the moon. The moon always faces the Earth as if it were there were some kind of magical arm holding onto the moon so that the moon always faces the same side to the Earth all the time as it goes around the Earth. Well, Bedini's energizer coils do the same thing. If he's got five or whatever, how many coils he's got surrounding the center of rotation on a plane, and the plane of his coils is coincident with the plane of rotation, but they always roll, really, is the way to put it. They roll around the center of rotation. They don't spin. And it's a very odd arrangement, and yet it creates parallel capacitance, is what it does, because it's very weak coupling between the coils and between the center of rotation of the magnetic field among those coils, that the magnetic field that's being created by the rotation of those coils. And because of that parallel capacitance, he's got synchronicity going on among the coils. Now, it may sound very speculative on my part, but it's not that far of a stretch, because the coupling is kept low among those coils, not high like we would normally suspect or intend when we wind coils, because it's only through weak coupling that we get strong mutual capacitance that can create synchronicity without doing it the way that I describe in the Amon device. And that's the purpose of having weak magnetic coupling, is to increase mutual capacitance, to induce synchronicity of timing in your various oscillatory waves that are in those coils. Now, I can't remember how the coils are wired exactly, if they're in parallel, if they're in series with each other. Might make a difference, I don't know. Probably does. My memory's not too good because I haven't looked at it recently to refresh my memory, but that's what I suspect is going on just from not even remembering exactly too much about it. Just the fact that they're on the same plane and they're rotating or rolling around the center of rotation with a lot of space between them, that tells me very weak magnetic coupling right away, so without having to know too much of anything. And I have to assume it's parallel capacitance that's being raised due to low magnetic coupling, low mutual inductance, because why? Because they're all in the same plane, but not concentric. Just like Jim Murray's two extra coils surrounding his rotary transformer coil, transforming coil in the center. They have their orientation of wrapping or winding in the same plane as the plane of rotation in the center coil of Jim Murray's transforming generator. It's kind of like he did something, a different version of Bedini's Energizer, basically. And it's a very astute variation, because it still does the same thing, but it does it in its own way, in its own construction, in its own design. And I might venture to say more efficiently, far more efficiently. Yet it's still the same concept when you think about it, because really, he's got a DC motor driving the darn thing. The darn thing puts out power, feeds back to the DC motor, and then he's got to, whoopsie, control the amount of power going back to the DC. So it's the same concept. He just did it so efficiently that it literally can spin out of control if it's not regulated. So in more ways than one, it looks exactly like the same desire. It's satisfying the same desire that John Bedini had as a boy, but is taking it to a whole nother level, Jim Murray's transforming generator. But again, it's parallel capacitance that's driving the thing. And so he made use of it the most efficient way possible, I would imagine, and doing it in the format of coils that are loosely coupled in their mutual inductance. Here, in the Amon case, we don't have coils that were couplings per se. We're having plates and layers of plates. Copper plates, I'm assuming, extending out from the two copper tubes towards each other, but interleaved among each other with dielectric separators between each of those interleaved layers. And likewise, the two sets of aluminum plates that are dielectrically separated from the iron windings and hence from each other. So they're not stacked directly on top of each other, the aluminum sheets. One aluminum plate will be surrounded on either side, let's say, with wax paper, let's say they used. And then you've got a layer of aluminum winding both above and below. And then the next aluminum sheet from the other set, surrounded by wax paper on either side to insulate it. Anywho, I guess I've talked enough. it still leaves things in question, you know, up in the air. You know, is it a DC system or is it an alternating system? I'm convinced it's DC, but that's speculation on my part that it's intended to be, but I don't know that. All I know is that the iron encourages the DC aspect of electricity because of remnants and because of the arrangement of those plates in between the layers. It just seems to encourage a buildup of charge, both a magnetic charge in the iron and a dielectric charge in the aluminum. But whether the whole field alternates or not, I'm not convinced I know the answer to that. But it's very intelligent how they went about it, using the iron to drive the emphasis of DC. They're emphasizing DC, but whether or not it lasts more than a half cycle of what's oscillating over from the being originated over by the copper side, I don't know. I still can't guess. I don't have enough information to guess at it. So until I find out otherwise, I'm still leave it up to grabs whether or not the oscillations that are encouraged on the copper side actually extend over to the other side, the aluminum iron side, and encompass the entire circuit, or whether it stays isolated, whether or not alternating a polarization in an oscillatory manner remains isolated on the copper side and translates into pulsed DC on the iron aluminum side. I don't know. It's still, electrically speaking, an H shape in which iron's on one vertical leg, shall we say, of the H, copper's on the other, and aluminum is the brace that embraces the two in the middle. Electrically speaking, but magnetically speaking, the aluminum is extended into the layers of windings of the iron, so that, in a sense, we've got a loop now. Yeah, no, we do. We have ourselves a loop, a circuit, which we don't have on the copper side per se, at least not to the same degree. The copper spheres are spaced apart, and there's no arcing between them that we know about. And the only other connection is at the base of the copper tubes, where they form a transistor of two diodes, each one with copper aluminum and the other with copper aluminum, that are either facing each other or facing away, depending on how you want to phrase it. I don't know the correct phrasing, creating a kind of a opposition of sorts, a capacitive opposition. But because of that parallel capacitance in the middle, extending out from the two tubes as a single stack of dielectric plates, dielectric layers, I should say, it encourages, and copper encourages oscillations anyway, and then it gets synchronized, and so that's the only place I know for certain that there's oscillations going on of alternating polarity. So that much I can be certain of, because that is the nature of copper, to encourage that sort of thing. And that's the way Berkeley Spice family of simulators are designed they are predicated on the presumption that you will always wind your coils out of copper wire. And so the inductive behavior of the Berkeley Spice family of simulators always behaves as if they are copper windings and no other type imaginable. They don't imagine that you'll wind any other type of coil. So the behavior of inductivity within the Berkeley Spice family of simulators is always that of encouraging a buildup of dielectric force if you try to design an overunity circuit in a Berkeley Spice simulator, style simulator. Whether it's LTSPICE, MicroCap, PSPICE, NGSPICE, whatever SPICE version, it all comes down to the same presumptive prejudice. You know, that's the word I'm looking for, a prejudice, in assuming copper windings. Now, we're not doing that. We do have inductance along the two copper tubes, but it's very weak, but it's still copper. And so it still has that prejudice of encouraging oscillations and the buildup of dielectric force, because that's all copper is good for, is the buildup of dielectric force in an alternating behavior. And that's, I think, all the copper tube and copper sphere side of the Amman circuit is intended to do. But it's enough to drive the other side, the aluminum iron side, that becomes more practical in its expression, but still needs a driving element, and that's what the copper is there for. And that much I have seen so many times under simulation, and especially my Amman attempt at simulating the copper tube side of the circuit, that I don't have any doubt that's what the copper is intended to do. But I suspect the aluminum is trying to set up a dielectric field and the iron is setting up a magnetic field, and I am willing to lean in the direction that it's a DC field that's without alternations, that it's, and it's going to be pulsed as a consequence of still remaining connected to the copper side of the circuit, and that there is a circulatory flow of current, shall we say, at least operating within the aluminum, but it's expelled into the iron, which concentrates it inside itself. So the aluminum is, its dynamics is that of a dielectric because of what's been done to it. It's being used as the plates of capacitance, parallel capacitance, layered between the layers of the iron winding, but it's also transmitting to the iron winding, and the iron receives it and then concentrates that as magnetic memory inside of itself. Anywho, and then the aluminum also transmits to the copper transmission line of the cityscape and the copper house wiring inside the building of the Amman's household, because he has this power station somewhere, either the attic or the basement. I'll guess it's the basement. I can't remember which. Generating power that he's transmitting to all of his iron receiving coils attached to his various loads throughout his home or attached to the motor in his EV, in his electric vehicle. Well, I think I've said enough. I've repeated things a few times. I know I don't have access to illustrations or videos. I have to do everything verbally, unfortunately, the old way from the 1800s. Weak on the schematics and heavy on the diction, which makes it rough, I know, to try to get an imaginary concept in your brain of what's being described, but it's the only approach I can make at this point. It's the only contribution I can make, is all audio, purely oral. You just have to be able to imagine it in your head, and whether or not I'm getting through or not, I don't know. So it's not totally finalized for certain how the thing operates, but at least I've solved the riddle of why simulated circuits are so superior, because they're ideal, and why their real-world counterparts are not ideal and tend to fail in their over-unity. It all has to do with not realizing that parallel capacitance has to be used throughout an over-unity real-world circuit to make up for its not inclusion in the simulated version, because it's not needed, because it's already implied because of the clock timing that rules a simulation of a circuit in an electronic simulator. It's already implied. It's already digitally implied as a digital kind of stance taken, in similar to digital electronics, in which you've got a clock timer dictating the beat and everything within the chip upholds that beat. But in an analog free energy circuit, there ain't nothing there unless we put it there. And this is the extra work we have to do to put it there to make sure it behaves the way we intend it to and not lose grip, so to speak, of its over-unity. So this is a vital idea of parallel capacitance. And then how do we put it in is the next step of vitality or importance, I should say, or relevance, so that it does its job in fulfilling synchronicity among all the components within an over-unity real-world circuit, and thus give us the results we had simulated and expect to get.